So game C, I'm
gonna take every lead in C
though. Oh, you're a third year counselor? Okay, the first year counselor can't do it.
Okay, so let's try to finish up what we got stuck on yesterday on Mem, right?
You hate
us. Me? No, whatever. It's the Yates are hard, it's very clever.
Okay, so we're going through the arguments, right, of the, we were in the middle of the arguments that the Shoel would make to the Baal, right? I think that was what got a little confusing in the end. At some point it switches, and I don't think we were up to snuff on that, right?
Where are you?
So Mem, let's say... Mem on the bays. So he says, let's go to the Itam who have a ma riknale la agma. So in other words, these are arguments of who? Whose arguments are we saying now?
What's the flow regimen?
Okay, so the flow is like this. That the Braisa says that if I lend you a muad under the pretense of it being a tam, right? I tell you, you think it's a tam, and in reality it's a muad, right? And then under your watch, it damages. So the Braisa says, you pay half and I pay half, right? You pay half and I pay half. Correct?
Uh-huh.
So the first problem was, why should I pay if I didn't take an animal that I thought requires a lesser shmirah, and in fact it required a greater shmirah, so then I should be patur lagamri because I did the proper shmirah for what I thought it was. And if it was what I thought it was, nothing would have happened. So everything's on you. Right? That's the first argument. Whatever. So I'm not going to go through every single step of it, right? That's the first basic problem. So the Gemara says, no, you knew it was a nachon already, but you didn't know it was a muad. So then, basically, the Gemara is saying that once you accepted a tam, that's a nachon, so then you accepted shmira, right? You accepted the shmira, and you accepted half of the payment, because tam pays half. So therefore, as long as your liability is limited by what responsibility you accepted, namely half of the payment of the nezek, then you have no complaint. Because you got what you... You didn't take on more than you... We're not going to make you responsible for more than you accepted. What did you accept upon yourself? You accepted upon yourself a chatzi nezek situation. And you accepted upon yourself a good shmira because you knew it was a nakhon. So now, when it goes out and damages, doesn't matter that it's a muad. Your half, you should pay anyway because that's what you accepted. Now, Tosfos has a very important caveat that since the Tams has a limitation of the liability on the value of the shore itself, this person would also be limited in his liability by the value of the shore itself.
For
the full value of the shore. The full value
he's
of his shore.
He's only half of the value.
Yeah, so is his half equal to full?
No. He accepted upon himself, let's take numbers, okay? He borrowed a shore that was worth 100, right? It went down and it damaged, and did $500 worth of damage, let's say, right? So the full value is 500. So if it was a tom like he thought, he would be chayev the 250, but he would be limited by the value of the shore, so we'd only have to pay 100. So in this case, too, he pays 100. That's it. Who pays the rest? The Baal.
So the Baal pays 400.
The Baal has to pay 400. Because basically, the Baal is going to have to... it seems that way. It seems from this Gemara, at least, that all the Baal is saying is that you kick in what you already accepted, and I cover the rest. We shouldn't be double paying. So you kick into you contribute to the nezek what you accepted. So that's what they're arguing about. What did I accept? So he's saying, look, you accepted a nagchan for half the damage limited by the value of the shore. So pay that. Right? So now the Gemara goes through more things that the Shoel could say. He says pay from the goof, that one didn't work out too well. Where is it now? Now he says, I could, if it was really a Tom, I would have been Moda. And I would have been putter completely. Right? So that's the Shoel's argument. Right? That's the Shoel's argument. E Tam hava modino miftarino. Right? Since it's, if you're going to hold Chatzi Nezek as a Kanas, so then he would have been Moda and putter completely. So why should I have to pay? I accepted a situation where I could have been Moda and out of the payment and putter. So why should I have to pay for the Mord? Why should I have to pay the half now? And even according to the Shita that says it's not a Kanas, right? That it's not a Kanas, and you'd have to pay even if you're Moda, he could have said, if it was a Tom, I would have hidden it in the bog. I would have hidden it in the bog. Okay, got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tosis, let's take a look at Tosis. Hava marikna leila agma. So Tosis is like this. What kind of an argument is this? Tema ma tainu hizu. Imkina yosir slokidin. What kind of an argument is this? What kind of argument is that the Shoel will say, I could have done something illegal, so that's why I shouldn't have to pay? Are you allowed to just hide the thing? I mean, so he says, Bishlam ol Rabbi Yishmoel damar bal chov ninu nicha kitzas. Dika lemeim adavi achalena le o hosom o mazvanina le v'lo hav elekim mazik shibudo shachaver upata. Okay, so this is another machlokas over here on Lamed Gimel. It's good to know more, get a little more information here. So take a quick look over here, Lamed Gimel. The Gemara says, the last mission on the daf. Shor shovem monesh and nogach shor shovem masayim. Okay, so the shore is worth 100 and it kills a shore that's worth 200. Ve'ein an nevela yofek klum. And the veil is worth nothing. No tell is a shore. It says that the Nizak takes physical possession of the Mazik shore. Okay? So the Gemara says the Mishnah must be Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because it says like this. D'tanya, you sham ha-shore be-based-in. The shore gets evaluated in based-in. Divrei Rabbi Yishmoel. Rabbi Akiva Omer, huchlat ha-shore. Okay, so what does that mean, Rashi? Yusham shor hamazik bebeistin v'yitin lo mazik mo'os demei hashor. So Rabbi Yishmoel says, you see, Rabbi Yishmoel says that the beistin takes the shor and evaluates it and makes the mazik pay the value. Okay. U'b'shovem ona shenogach l'shovem masayim v'in nevei l'shovem klum kamayri. Okay. But Rabbi Akiva says huchlat hashor, means hashor atzmo yikach, he takes the shore itself. So this Gemara is like Rabbi, this mission is like Rabbi Akiva, that he takes the shore. Because Rabbi Shmuel says that he never actually takes the shore; they just evaluate the value. They just evaluate it and make the Baal pay.
The Rabbi Shmuel's thing of Yusham is they're taking the value of the dead one?
No, the live one. Beistin takes the live shore. Yusham shore hamazik, the Beistin.
Oh, hamazik, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
the Beistin evaluates the shore hamazik, and then the mazik gives him the ma'os.
Ma'os of what? Of the live one?
Demei hashore, of the live shore, right, which is the chatzi nezek. Of the dead shore, because it's talking about where they're equally valued, and then the veil is worth nothing. So if my shore is worth 100, your shore is worth 100, your dead shore is worth 0, take my 100, I'll give you 50, based on evaluates the live shore, so it's worth 100, give him 50.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay.
But Rabbi Akiva is saying you just give the physical shore over.
A swap.
No, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. With the money. The case is like this. The shore is worth 100. My shore is worth 100. Your shore was worth 200. And now that it's dead, it's worth zilch. So all of my shore is half the nezek. Right? Half of the damage was 100. My shore is worth 100. That's the case that they're arguing in. Rabbi Shmuel says, Basin will say, your shore is worth 100. Give him 100 bucks. And Rabbi Akiva says, Basin will say, give him the shore. Okay?
What practically is the difference?
Ah, there's a big practical difference. So what are they arguing about, though, al pi svara? So the Gemara says, b'mayka miflagi, Rabbi Shmuel, so for bal chov hu. In other words, what happens? Rabbi Shmuel holds that when my shore kills your shore, I become your debtor.
Yeah.
You become my creditor. I become your debtor. Okay? And the debt is limited by the shore. Okay? Vizuzi hu demasikle. So how do I pay off a debt with money? Okay? Rabbi Akiva savar shutvei ninu. Rabbi Akiva holds that you actually become a bailim on my shore. It actually becomes your shore up to the value of half of your nezek. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, I can demand that you hand over the shore. According to Rabbi Shmuel, cannot demand.
The chati nezek is
the full value of the shore. So now it turns out I own all of your shore. I'm actually the owner of that shore.
And it also has a difference where if the second shore then gets stuck in a bog, disappears.
Oh, okay.
Right,
well, that's what we're going to get up to. Right. Yeah. So, but you hear what I'm saying? Gil, in all of these things, anybody can do anything they want. Because it's mammon. Anybody can agree to anything. The question is, what can I demand? Okay? So, if you owe me $100, I cannot come into your house and say, this is worth $100, give it to me. Right? I have no right to any single item in your possession. You can always say, here's $100 cash, go away. Right? But if I own something of yours that's in your possession, I can say, give that back to me. And you can't say, well, here's $100, take it instead. Right? So it's the same thing over here. According to Rabbi Shmuel, when my shore kills your shore, and my shore is worth 100 and your shore is worth 200. So I owe you, now it's converted into a chov. I owe you $100. You can't force me to give you my shore. I can always be, that's what the Gemara says, zuzehu demasikle. I pay you off with money. But Rabbi Akiva holds, now you own my shore. So it's yours, okay? So therefore, I can't say take money if you want the shore. And they argue on this pasuk. Umochro es ashor hachai v'chotzu es kaspo. And they sell the live shore and split its value. Rabbi Shmuel sovar lebeidino komazir rachmana. Rabbi Shmuel holds the pasuk is telling Basin what to do. So Basin has to go in and make an estimation. Rabbi Kiva Sovar Lenizak Umazik Mazilu. Alright, whatever, that's the direction. But now it goes like my beinayu, hikdisho nizak ike beinayu. What would be a nafkamina? Let's say you are the nizak and you say the shore is hektish.
To who? To me? Oh.
You say the shore is hektish. Your shore is hektish.
You can't take it?
Whatever. So, according to Rabbi Shmuel, will it work?
No.
Because you don't have any ownership over the shore. According to Rabbi Kiva, the shore will be hektish.
And then, therefore, the guy who is the victim, it now has nothing to claim.
No, it's the victim who did it. Let's say the victim decided he wants the shore to be hektish.
Oh. So now the original ball of it. Has
he can't. He has to give it up to hektish.
As opposed to
Rabbi Shmuel, who says that it's only a chov, so if the Nizak says the shore is hektish, it has no effect.
I have a question. Is Rabbi Akiva's case just saying that the shore is just a collateral until you're good for the money?
Rabbi Shmuel, you mean?
No, the
Baal Chov guy.
So the Rabbi Shmuel's thing is that the...
It's sort of like a collateral.
...is the value, but then what's... So what's the Shutfus? What are you calling the Shutfus?
That's Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah.
Rabbi Akiva means that actually you become an owner.
And a full 100% owner?
Up to what you're entitled. Up to half of the Nezek of your shore.
So
that's the amount that you own the Mazik shore.
So
if the Mazik shore was 100 and the Nezek was 200, you own all of the shore.
Okay, fine. That's what I was asking. So now the Shutfus is 100%, 0%.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's Rabbi Akiva?
That's Rabbi Akiva.
So is he the one that says about the...
The Hekdesh, yes.
So I'm saying, what would you have thought of? Like, why is this a...
Why is it say that's the Nafkamina?
Yeah. No, but meaning why... Right, why is this...
In terms of...
That you could say...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that
is. No, but then the problem is, say you only... Say the shores were both 200... And you only own 50% of this. An animal can't be 50% Hekdesh, can he?
They'd sell it, and 50% of the money has to go to Hekdesh.
Oh, fine. Oh, okay. So what's the problem?
Meaning maybe that's the difference. You could order him to
kill it and
to
sell
make
it
Hekdesh.
Maybe. Okay. Anyway.
Oh.
So, but we're just here for this one thing now. So now Tosis builds up his question. So he says like this. Now let's go back to our case. What is the guy saying? The guy is saying, if it was really a tom, I could have hidden it in the forest. I could have hidden it in the swamp. I could have basically, stashed it away. So Tos is saying, how could the guy say something like that? He says, okay, if you're going to learn like Rabbi Shmuel, so then the cow doesn't really belong to the Nizak, right? The shore doesn't belong to the Nizak. It's still wrong because he is like a mazik shibudo shel chavero. In other words...
Well, the guy has the right to the money already.
He has the right to the money, but it seems still via that cow. So, well, let's assume the guy has no other money. Let's assume the mazik has no other money. So I'm sort of like damaging your claim by hiding assets.
Because it's unestimatable?
No. Let's just because I'm making it hard for you to collect your claim. Right? Like O.J. Simpson. He hides away his money. So what did he do? He made it hard to collect the claim. Okay? That's not nice. Not nice. But is it an isser? Maybe not. Okay? But according to Rabbi Akiva, who holds it actually belongs to the Nizak now, No, Tos is trying to work up the question. He's saying, how could the Shoel say, I could have hidden it? It's wrong. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not that wrong. But if you learn like Rabbi Akiva, it's mamish gezel.
Yeah. But
so how could the guy say, if it was a tom, I wouldn't have had to pay? How? I would have hidden away the cow. But according to Rabbi Akiva, the cow belongs to the Nizak. How could the guy make a claim I would have stolen the Nizak's money? According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not actual theft. Because all he has is a claim on the guy's reshus. So he's sort of ferreting away the assets, making it hard to collect on that claim. But according to Rabbi Akiva, the claim is a claim of Gezel Mamish.
So he's building this case, right?
That's his question. His question is, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's impossible to make this claim. I would have... Just to review, the Shoel is saying, I am glad and I am happy and willing to pay any hischaivus I would have had from a tom. But I'm telling you, I'm crafty. If it was a tom, I would have hidden it. And I wouldn't have paid. So basically, now that it's a muad and the hiding trick doesn't work, I shouldn't have to pay. Because the hiding trick doesn't work because it's not dependent on the cow anymore. So, in other words, the Shoel is saying, I am willing to pay anything I would have had to pay were it a tom. But I'm demonstrating that if it was a tom, I would have avoided payment. How? I would have hidden it. So Tosa says, what do you mean he would have avoided payment by hiding it? That's mamish gezel, according to Rabbi Akiva.
How does that answer his question, though?
That is Tosa's question on the Gemara.
How could...
Because the guy can't make a... Because you can't say, I didn't accept paying for a tom because I would have stolen money. Notice the argument has to be that within the bounds of the law, I wouldn't have had to pay. Therefore, I never accepted the payment. But you can't say I never accepted the payment because I would have been a thief. That's not. That has nothing to do with your acceptance.
Yeah, excellent.
It has to not make sense. That's the point.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. How does he just get out of the money though?
Because according to Rabbi Akiva, he doesn't owe him money.
Because it's
dependent. The animal becomes the nizaks. That's exactly what Rabbi Akiva holds.
Just how the din works. How does someone just not get paid if the animal's just not there?
The valuation is dependent on the animal, so you can't value the animal.
There's two things. According to Rabbi Akiva, it's even more. According to Rabbi Akiva, the nizak, the mazik's shore, the din of payment is that he becomes an owner in the shore of the mazik. That is the halacha of payment. Okay? It would be like if I said to you, what's the din? If your shore damages my shore, what's the din? Your shore becomes mine. That's the din. Now, if your shore becomes mine and you hide it, okay, I can't find my object, so. I don't have any other claim. It's like a kinyan. It becomes mine.
It's his, but you just don't know where it is.
So Tosa says, how could the guy make that claim? How could he make that counterclaim? Yeah, I would have hidden his object from him. That's called gezel. Okay? So he says, the ode, the based in yadun yinduhu im lo yishalim im yeshlo. Furthermore, Basin will put him into Chirim. Menirali Sharotza Loma mitoch dvarim elu shahayisi osa haya nizak mispasher imi bidavra muat vaya mochali v'nimtzashif sad tani kol hayisaron. So Tosus, has to do some major maneuvering over here. A major reinterpretation. And he says, you know what, that's not the guy's claim. That's ridiculous. Like, I can't claim I shouldn't have to pay Chatzi Nezek because I would have stolen his shore and he wouldn't have been able to get it. Tosa says all it really means is the guy says I would have dealt with the Nizak in a way that he would have agreed with me, compromised with me, and I would have been able to get off for cheaper.
Holding it over the guy's head, like I'm not going to tell you where it is.
And that matters whether it's a muad or a tom.
So by a muad, you don't have leverage. He doesn't have negotiating leverage.
But by a tom,
he would have had some negotiating leverage. He never would. He can't make the claim I would have stolen.
Oh, this is a tom nakan.
What's that?
This is a tom nakan.
That's right. Yeah.
So why can't we use this any time? Like, why doesn't that ever apply?
Because when the money is owed from any of your assets, you don't have that bargaining power. But it seems he's just saying the guy could have said, since the money is tied up in this shore, I had more leverage to bargain with the guy.
Yeah.
Tosus is like the pshat. Without the Tosus, you don't know the pshat. It's not like a, you know what I mean? It's just like.
And the Gemara doesn't overprice
it. All of these are just steps the Gemara never sticks with, any one of them. But let's go a little further. So now the Gemara says, Elohocha b'mayaskin. So why can't he make the claim that he would have been mode, or that he could have hidden it, not as a theft, but as a negotiating tool, right? Why couldn't he make any of those claims? Because the Akdim Beidina Vitafse. The case must be that the Beis Din seized it immediately. And therefore, these claims are not open.
They evaluated it?
Yeah, well, they grabbed it. the Beis Din took possession of the shore immediately. He had no opportunity to hide it. He had no opportunity to be moda, and therefore, he doesn't have any of those claims.
That sounds like had it not been the case that Beis Din seized it, then he really could have gone through with
these claims. Okay, ihachi bailim amay mishalmim chati nezek. Now the Gemara switches. We didn't notice this yesterday. Now the Gemara switches gears. Up till now, it's been asking why the Shoel has to pay Chati Nezek. And it says the case must be that the Beis Din seized it immediately. So now it switches. So now why do the Bailim have to pay at all? Why? What does that have to do with anything? Just because the Beis Din seized it, why does it change the Bailim's obligation? He says, Neimole at faste litoroi. Sounds like a good claim to me. Just kidding. So what is the guy's argument? What is the Bailam's argument now?
This is the best Gemara.
I'm not totally sure what this means, okay? But I think it means that the Baal is now saying to the Nizak, you screwed up by let... Oh, hold on. Okay. Okay, so now the argument switches. Now the argument goes that the Bailim says to the Nizak, why did you let that shore get seized by Beis Din right away?
Because the Bailim says he could have bid it?
Because the Bailim will say, I could have dealt with the guy. Now it's in the hands of somebody I can't deal with. I can't. He's using the compromise argument now, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Right? Now it's my shore is in the hands of Mandlo Matsina Lishta Uye Dina Bade. Now my shore is in the hands of somebody I can't speak din with. I don't have any bargaining power anymore. Right? What's Ishta Uye? Well, let's see. Let's take a look at Tosov here. Just like this. Vim Tom Avare Hulo Hit Fiso Biodayim Dioikdim Based in Vitaf Sua. Says, why is the Baal blaming the Shoel? The Shoel didn't do anything. Beis Din came in and took it. He didn't give it away. He didn't know it was a Muad. He didn't know it was a Muad. And therefore what? Let's take a look.
The Shomer didn't know it was a Muad.
Yeah, the Shomer didn't know.
This is independent of the previous...
of the borrower. Let's go a little further than those. Yesh lomer de miyad kishenoga chayalochus yoser shema hayamuad. He says, no, the shomer should have been suspicious that maybe it was a muad once he saw that happen. The kodem negicha ain lo lochus kolkach lefish ain hefsed mezuman de shema lo yigach. Aval la'achash enogach mezumonin based in litofso v'hayalo lochus lehi zohir shlo yipol biyad based in. Why does Beis Din grab the Muad's cow?
Maybe it's like a collateral in case they don't pay.
He's saying if he thought it was a... That's what Tosa's trying to work out. That the guy is to blame for the animal being snatched by Beis Din.
Because he should have suspected it's a Muad. But wouldn't right. Beis Din think it's a Tom? Because they would have asked him and he would have said it's a Tom.
But for some reason he's saying if it was a Tom, Beis Din wouldn't have snatched it. Why not?
Sounds like it would be the opposite.
So the Gemara says like this. Let's go a little further. It doesn't seem like these arguments necessarily are self-contained. Because then the Gemara says, he says to him, if I would have given it to you, that's what he wanted. He wanted him to give him back the animal. He says, why did you let them grab it? You should have given it back to me.
Wanted.
The lender wanted the borrower, he should have given the animal back to me. Why did you let Beis Din grab it? So he says, "Ia drise nihaloch, lav mi noch havashokul way." They would have taken it from you. I mean, it's Beis Din. What are we gonna do? V'neim alei. So then the guy says, "No. If you would have given it back to me, I would have hidden it." She says to him, "What are you talking about hidden it? Wake up! It was a muad. They're gonna take your money anyway." The hiding argument was good for the guy who said, I accepted the tom. Not a good argument for you when you knew it's a muad.
But
Gil, Right. But in other words, but how does the Bilam make the argument? I would have hidden it. He couldn't have hidden. He knew it was a mu'ud. A mu'ud pays me'aliyah. Right? So the Gemara says, ha nicha hecha de islay nichasi. Yeah, that's a good argument to make back to the Bilam when the Bilam has other money. But maybe this guy was broke, and this was the only asset he had.
What's nichasi?
Money.
So now he's...
Then he could have hidden it.
But he's still stealing.
So you have to interpret it the same way Tosas interpreted the other time, right? So he says, no, even though he had no money. Oh, so now we got to figure out why it's not a good argument if the guy has no money that the Bilam should be Pater. Yeah, the Bilam. One more time. No, the Bilam is saying like this. The Bilam is saying, it was your fault. Why I'm paying? I'm paying because of your stupid fault. You should have given me the cow right away. It's because you dilly-dallied, Basin swooped in and took it. If you would have given it back to me right away, I would have hidden it. So now it's your fault that I'm paying. So you have to pay. I'm not paying anything.
We're trying to prove that that's not true. Or that
just having a little fun here. Give me a second. Just trying to get into the character.
So this is the borrower who...
So now that's the owner of the cow blaming the borrower for the liability. And therefore he's saying, why should I have to pay anything? It's your fault. You should have to pay everything. Because you owe me because you're causing me to pay. That's basically the gist of his argument, right? So now we're trying to figure out how could he have gotten out of paying? So he says, I would have hidden it. So then the guy says, what do you mean you would have hidden it? They would have taken any of your assets. No, I have no other assets. So now it's a good argument.
Okay.
The good argument is, I'm the lender. I have no assets. If you would have given it to me right away, I would have secreted it. And then they wouldn't have taken any of my money. I would have worked out a side deal with the guy. Well, fine. But now that you let Basin grab it, I'm out half of the cow.
Seeing that he didn't have anything else besides this.
So the question is, why is this not a good argument? Okay? So the Gemara says, the Amale ki hechi de mishtabna lididach. This is the borrower, right? He says, just like I would have been in your debt, hochanami mishtabna lehayach, midi Rabbi Nosson. You would have owed the other person because of Rabbi Nosson. The Tanya, Rabbi Nosson Omer, minayin lenosha b'chaver amona v'chaver b'chaver minayin shemotzi in mizeh v'nosson lezeh tamalo v'nosson l'shir osham lo. So he's saying that it's true you don't have any money, but you still would have had a debt, a lien, and therefore you would have owed me money, and therefore anyone who owed you money I could have collected from. So therefore what? Therefore it wouldn't have helped you. In other words, it's true it wouldn't have helped you in terms...
Right, but the second you made an asset, you would have to pay it off.
Or even a debt. Anyone owes you any money, you would come to... I would be able to collect on your debts. On debts that you're owed.
The borrowers?
The borrower.
I mean, how is he collecting on
it? I'm sorry. The lender is saying to the borrower is saying to the lender, you are saying if you would have had no assets, since you have no assets and you would have hidden it, then you would have been free from liability, right? But the borrower is saying, look, it's not true because I still would have the shibud of Rabbi Nosson. Even if you had no assets. What's the shibud of Rabbi Nosson? That if you owe me money, and he owes you money, I can go directly to him and get it. So that would have existed.
In assets. Or like,
right. It's not to him, but he's saying you would have owed the other guy the money. You know, this true Basin wouldn't have been able to collect it. No, it is true, Basin. If I would have given it back to you immediately, and you would have hidden it away, then what?
You would have still have had a debt.
That's right. You still would have a debt to the guy, and therefore that would deprive you from any money that you are owed.
But it's saying further than that.
In other words, he's trying to say that hiding it won't help because there still is an effect. There still is an effect on that money that's owed. And what's the effect on the money that's owed? That anyone who owes you money can jump over you and give it directly to the other guy. And then your hiding asset days are over. We're not sure about that. So you have that in American law. You have an interesting case like that. They have these things. They have these cases, a lot of these cases where you have very rich, what they call the trust fund kids. You ever hear that? Trust fund kids? So what does that mean? It means the parents are very wealthy. And the kids don't have any of their own assets. So what they do is they set up a trust fund for the kid to live off. Because why do they do that? They don't want to give the kid the money. They don't trust to give the money. Yeah. Right?
Not trust fund.
Meaning, like an allowance.
Okay. The assets are held by a trustee, and the kid gets an allowance. So what happens is, what happens if the kid racks up huge debts? Okay? That's the reason why they do these things. Now the creditors have nowhere to go, because the trust doesn't owe them the money. The trust didn't take out the debt. This kid took out the debt. The only thing is, every month he gets $5,000 given to him by the trustee, right?
He's going to pay the debt from those $5,000.
That's right, but it's a crazy thing. Actually, the law is, they don't hold from Shibud to Rebbe Nosson. So therefore, the trustee only gives it to him, and if he can spend it before the other guy can grab it, that's it.
That's the American law?
That's the American law.
Wow.
In other words, the trustee can only give the money to the kid. So if he can get...
Has the discretion to pay off the debt or not to pay.
That's
off the
right.
Debt.
If he can spend that money before they can grab it, then they can't get it. But Shibud de Rebbe Nosson, Shibud de Rebbe Nosson is not just an academic thing. It has a tremendous value. Because if a guy is a spendthrift...
It would go from the trust fund to the debt.
That's right. Then the guy could come and say, the trust says you have to pay Plony. I have a debt. You have to pay me directly. Then he'd get paid.
So it's not that he could grab $100,000 that month, but he could grab the full $5,000 that's been paid out.
That's right.
American law, though, has
so that's what he's saying.
Wages. You could, that's a Shibud de Rebbe Nosson type of thing.
That's true.
They intercept it. It's
that's
not
the garnishing
away.
Right, that would be a Shibud de Nosson, right.
Yeah.
In these trust cases, though, that would, I don't know if they changed the laws in these things, but that's when I was in law school.
Oh, they
we learned
have
a lot
like
of cases like that.
From that?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think because the trust says specifically, they write them like that, that the trustee is not authorized to pay any money to any debtors, to any creditors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And since it's my money I'm putting into a trust, I can direct where it goes. Right.
Because it's the trust does not belong.
Okay, let's just do the last piece over here. This probably doesn't have much of what we needed. But let's do the last piece. Now the last piece is like this. The first way we were dealing with the shoel getting the shor that was really a muad when he thought it was a tam. Now we have the second half of the brisa, where the shoel borrows the tam, turns it into a muad, and then returns it as a muad, and then it says that the bailim pay half, and the shoel pays nothing, right? So why is that? So the Gemara says, the seifa says rishus mishana, reisha says rishus eina mishana. Now, the seifa seems to be implying that when it changes rishus, it resets back to a tam. And that's why the bailim pay like a tam, and the shoel is pater, because it really is a tam. But the reisha said when it goes from the... the tam doesn't reset, because when he lends it over to the guy, it stays as a muad. So Rabbi Yochanan says tavra, that's it. This is a tough one. Kick it out of this problem. Mi shoshana zu lo shoshana zu. It can't be the same tana.
What's tavra mean?
Rashi says tavra means kasha or something. I forget what it is.
Kasha.
That it's a kasha. You can't answer this question. Rabba says, Midereisha Rishus Eina Mishana, Seifa Nami Rishus Eina Mishana. He says, no, both of them are, we don't say, it stays the muad in both cases. So why in the Seifa does it say that he doesn't pay, that it's a tam? He says, Domele lav kol kaminach de miyadet alei leturai. I don't know exactly what it means. It means, lo shalochayav lo nizharta b'shmiraso. for some reason it sounds like he's saying it can't become a muad unless it's under the Bailam's rishus. It only becomes a muad to the guy who's ultimately responsible for it. It's not really yours for it to become a muad in your rishus. So it just can't become a muad in the rishus of a shul.
So if it gores, let's say, 3 times in your rishus, it doesn't gain the status of a muad until it goes back to the Baal?
Something like that. Unless under the Baal's shmira, it can only become a muad. Not really sure. But then the Gemara rejects that one anyways. The Gemara says, Rav Papa, the last answer, Rav Papa Omar, me the sefer rishus mishana, reisha nami rishus mishana. So how come both of them rishus is mishana? V'reisha hayna taima, so why in the reisha is he chayav, like a muad, even though it's rishus is mishana? This is like Yonah was saying yesterday. Hayna taima mishum dekol mokom sheholech shame bailav olav. Rashi kloma. Chad tanu, it's all the same tana. Ulatana de resha nami sovale nami hach de sefer de rishus mishana. They both agree that changing rishus changes the animal back to a tam, and that's why in the sefer when it goes back it becomes a tam again. Vereisha mishum hachi. So why in the resha does it stay a muad even though it goes to the show all rishus? Harehu b'ches kaso she'ein kan shini rishus she'kol mokom she'holech shem b'ilav olav. But the Reisha is learning that since it became a muad in the rishus of the Baal, then wherever, even though he lends it out, it still has the shame of the Baal on it. That's not called a shini rishus.
So, like, if I give someone,
but isn't that a stira? So then it means when the shoal has it, it's not his. So why
does he have to pay anything?
What's the shini rishus? How can you have shini rishus one way or the other? I still don't understand. Right. So then how come? So then how come in the seifa when it becomes a muad in the rishus of the shoal? So then when he gives it back, it's considered like a shini rishus.
Wasn't it just that the shoal eventually learned that the thing?
And we treat it like a muad. It was the resha, it was a muad, and he gives it to the shoal, and we treat it like a muad. So we don't say there's a change. The sefer says it was a muad, it became a muad, and the rishus of the shoal. And when you give it back to the baal, now we treat it like a tam. So it's saying the shinoi of rishus changes it. So why? Why? So then why doesn't the shinoi rishus in the resha change it? So the Gemara is saying that it always has the shame of the Baal on it. So therefore, kol mokom sheholech shame bailav olav. So therefore, it's beches kaso. She'ein kan shini rishus. So if that's the case though, no, so apparently it's learning like this, that from the point of where it gets the shame, the identity of the muad, you have to ask if there's a shini rishus from there. So when, if it became the muad in the hands of the shoel, so that's under his shame, it became a muad. Right? It's his muad. But when he gives it back to the bailam, he has no shaychus to it anymore. It's not still called his. Right? The shame muad came about under his watch. So the shame muad is associated with him. But when he gives it back to the owners, his ownership is completely removed. So that's a full shinoi rishus. But if it became a muad under the owner, even when he lends it out, it's still identified with him. So that's not called a shinoi rishus. So you got to get the rishus of the shame muad has to change. So if it became a muad in the shoel's rishus, when it's returned, it has nothing to do with the shoel. So it's no longer his muad. But if it became a muad in the rishus of the Baal, even though he lends it out, it still is the Baal's.
So the Baal is always in trouble.
So the Baal is always in trouble. But here it's asking a more abstract question of whether the shame muad is undone from the Shinei Rishus? Does it become a tam again? I think that's what it's talking about. So it's saying it will become a tam if there's a shinoi from the Rishus of the Muad. So you got to ask, when did it become a Muad? And when it goes back, is it still under that same identity? So if it became a Muad when it was a Shoel, when it was in the hands of the Shoel, so now it's going back to the owner, that's not considered under the same shame of the Shoel anymore. You don't say when a borrower returns something, it's still identified with him. It's not. But if it became a Muad in the owner's hands, then wherever it's lent out, it still is property of so-and-so. So then that never changed. So it'll always be a Muad. As long as it became a Muad in the owner's hands, no matter who he lends it out to, it'll stay a Muad. But if it becomes a Muad in the borrower's hands, when he returns it, it's a Shinoi. So therefore, the Reisha says it's a Muad, and he lends it, it's still a Muad. The Seifa says if he returns it as a Muad, it's only counted as a Tam. Mm-hmm.